Before we jump into this interview, I wanted to make mention of the fact that the interview that we're presenting is designed to provide accurate and helpful information regarding whatever the subject matter is that's being covered. But we're making this available with the understanding that we're not endeavoring to be offering specific legal, accounting, medical, financial, psychological, or other professional services. Laws and regulations are continually changing, and they can vary according to location and time. So we're just not wanting to make any kind of representation that the information here that we're offering is applicable for all locations and times. And if you need legal advice, medical advice, psychological advice, accounting advice, or whatever, obviously we want you to seek out the services of competent professionals in the area of need. But we hope this is very helpful to you, and we wish you the very best as you listen. God bless you. Well, this is Tony Cook, and I want to thank you for joining us today. I have Charlie Daniels here with me today. Charlie has a very extensive background in church construction, building churches, and I'm going to ask him to tell us about that in just a moment. But before we dive into this, I want to take just a quick moment and say thank you to all the pastors that responded to the survey that we sent out some time ago. We asked pastors a few questions about what their experiences have been in building churches and renovations and obtaining financing, and what did they learn from it, what would they pass on to somebody else who was getting ready to tackle a church building project. And I just want to thank all of you that responded. It's been extremely helpful. And I know we've gotten all these to Charlie several days ago for him to review. And we met earlier today to kind of review them and discuss them. So pastors, thank you so much. And Charlie, want to welcome you to this recording session that we're going to be doing. And take a minute, just tell us about your background in building, how long you've been involved, what are some of the projects you've been involved in. Just give us your kind of personal history in that.
Thank you, Pastor Cook. My background started when I was a kid. My dad was a pastor, and he would build buildings, build on the church, build on the parsonage. He was kind of he did it all. Mm-hmm. And so he made me and my brother, of course, help him. And so our background just grew from there. And at 16, I went into construction business.
Mm-hmm. And let me back up. What's your earliest recollection of helping your dad with the building? How old were you?
I remember as a kid, he was in Wanchese, and they were building a church. And I was helping put dirt. I would have been around 6 or 7.
Okay.
Putting dirt on the back of a Jeep and hauling it into the sanctuary.
Okay.
So we were just around it all our life.
Uh-huh.
And then I went into construction business. And
you said at age 16.
At age 16. I was working full-time, and that progressed to where I had a company at probably age 24, and we were building houses, and then it went on to commercial buildings, and built a few churches at that time, and really weren't living for the Lord at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company got to where we were building hotels, condos, banks, restaurants, any type of commercial work. And I left the company in 1987, August of 87, and actually moved to Florida and ended up coming to Rhema the next year in 88. Mm-hmm. Went to Rhema for 2 years. And at that point, really didn't know what I was going to do. Had always had in my heart to help pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And actually at one time I thought, well, maybe I'm supposed to be a pastor. But that wasn't to be. But anyway, when Pastor Hagin approached me about building their church, I just knew that was what I was supposed to do.
And you're talking about the big sanctuary at
Rhema. Big sanctuary, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was 5,000 seat and 250,000 square foot, nice facility. They did everything really right. So it was really a pleasant experience working with the Hagins doing that. And then worked there for several years, overseeing their maintenance, doing helping other churches. And then over the last few years, the Lord has allowed me to start building again.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're working with Billy Joe Daugherty. They're doing their 5,000-seat auditorium, and I'm doing one for Ron Johnson in Hampton, Virginia. Mm-hmm. So we're staying really busy. We built a couple, Greg Varney's. He's about 1,600 seats, really nice facility. And I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it just seems to be the right thing.
And you're functioning as what's called a construction manager.
That's right.
Tell us, what is that?
What the term is, we're a construction manager where you'll go in and you work with the church. And that's more what I do. Mine actually is probably even a little different than working with a normal construction manager. I noticed I saw some questions in here about making sure that you get the right person on your team to oversee your contractors. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm kind of a hybrid of a contractor and a construction manager. I try to come in and work for the church to oversee the subs, but turn the church into a contractor. Mm-hmm. So we get all the savings. So it's a little different. But a construction manager, normally they come in and they manage the construction. Sometimes they'll even hire a contractor. I try to not go that route to try to save that money, mm-hmm. to put that in the church's pocket. So in short, that's a construction manager.
Okay. Let's just say the guys that are going to be listening to this and the ladies that are going to be listening are pastors who are on the verge of building. They're thinking about it. They may be in the early stages of planning. And, you know, a lot of pastors, you know, they've got their Bible training. They've been to Bible school and all that. They may not have a background in construction. They may never built anything per se. And so a lot of pastors feel very intimidated by it. Sometimes they're in situations where they can be easily taken advantage of by less than scrupulous people. Let's just say you're talking to a pastor and he's about to begin planning to build. What are some of the things that you would tell that pastor to get ready to have a successful building program and avoid some of the – because there are some real nightmare stories mm-hmm. out there.
Yes, sir. Pastor, I'd start with just your planning phase. I think for all churches, to sit down and start the planning phase, whether you've hired an architect or not yet at that point, start with your people, find out what your needs are, your basic needs, and then find out what your desires are. The two may not meet as mm-hmm. far as your money. But I tell churches all the time, start with monthly meetings. You can do them more than that, but monthly meetings seem to really work well.
To begin to brainstorm.
To brainstorm and to start to bring things to make them happen. Mm-hmm. Say, for instance, that you've got your property. You've already got that. You need to hire a civil engineer first. You need him before you do your architect. Now, a lot of times what will happen is your architect will come in and do your plans, but your civil engineer should be there first. He's going to work out your elevations, your zoning, have him go through the city, make sure you're zoned proper.
And that's before you purchase the property.
That's right. And your flood elevations, your retention ponds, you know, let him start working on all that to bring it about.
He handles all the environmental concerns as well.
That's right.
Okay.
So I'd do that first. And with having those monthly meetings, the people that are working with your team, you can have two or three from your church or your staff, the engineer, the architect, even get involved with a builder maybe even at that early stage if you can. And everybody comes back to the table every month and is held accountable that this is what we ask you to do, find out about. Where are we at on that? And it'll keep you moving forward in the process. And what I find is that if you don't start that process, every month will come up and you'll go 2 months and you didn't have a meeting, or 3 months, and then you're right back where you were. Well, okay, we're gonna do a building, mm-hmm. and you're starting all over. And one thing that we saw in these questions you'd ask, one guy had said, start your financial fundraising 3 to 5 years in advance. And I think that's an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. I see churches that wait until they're ready to start, and they're getting ready to go to the bank. The banker has told them, yes, 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 we'll loan you the money. But he never knew how much you wanted. Mm-hmm. So when you go, it's a lot more than his bank can even loan. So, of course, he can't loan you the money. Then you're scrambling trying to find money. Mm-hmm. And so I would. There's other avenues on getting the money. There's other than your bank, but I think have meetings and start your financial campaign immediately, mm-hmm. and do all that in your planning stage. The planning stage will keep you from having a lot of pitfalls when you start the construction.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to use concrete erasers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those jackhammers cost a lot of money. So, you know, if you're getting what you want and getting it planned proper and putting everything in order when the job starts, should go very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a nightmare. There's things that are always going to come up, no question about it. You can't plan enough for construction.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find something under the ground you didn't anticipate. You're going to find something that you missed in the plans. One thing I like to say is to pastors is construction isn't rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to find any rocket scientists working out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not trying to make things work to that type of precision. And there's a lot of flexibility in what we do. And there's a lot of field adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
And having somebody on your team that manages those field adjustments is going to be very important to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to save you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of headaches.
Mm-hmm.
But know that they're coming. Know that you're going to have some adjustments you're going to have to make.
Well, that's one of the things that the pastors repeatedly said in these surveys is they said that there will be surprises. There will be changes in the process. And they said you've got to be flexible.
That's right.
And another thing that a lot of the people said, a lot of the pastors who have built said, is that plan on it costing more than what you think ahead of time that it's going to cost. Why is that? What are all the factors that go into the building ending up costing more than what people planned?
Well, most of the time when you start the planning process, you go ahead and put a budget number to it. And the budget number shouldn't be used as the number until you get the plans. I say this all the time, and if pastors could ever remember this, remember it. You can't get a price on your building until you have a set of prints. You know, and too many times we're trying to give numbers because the pastor needs a number to start budgeting by. So he's wanting a number that he can live by. Well, you give him a budget number, but we have no prints, no plans. We don't know how much site work's going to have go on. And you try to stick with that number is what we try to do. And sometimes that's not what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
Once the plans come out and now you budget your numbers, you should stay within a certain percentage, you know, 3-5%. And I would highly recommend a contingency. Once you've gone through the bidding stage, then add I like to say a 3% contingency.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, we can figure about 3% more. And one of the reasons is when you go out and bid a job, these guys are bidding low. The low guy gets the job. So he's not going to add things in that you don't see. And then when you get into the process, you say, well, wait a minute. I was thinking we need to add this in there. He said, yeah, but you didn't say that. So now we got to add it. Now it's going to cost more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll jump ahead of myself a little bit. But in writing your contracts at that time in your planning stage, one thing I like to do and like to tell people to do is when you're writing the contract, set an hourly rate. Negotiate the hourly rate up front. Let me give you an example. Let's say you have an electrician come and he bids the job. Well, you know you're going to have some things that you're going to add or something's going to happen. Negotiate the rate you're going to pay him up front. Don't wait until he's got the job. You're not going to go out and find another electrician to come in. So his hourly rate will be more then.
Mm-hmm.
So you could negotiate. Let's, for example, maybe he gets $40 an hour on service calls. Try to negotiate him down to 25 or 30. Well, because he's getting this contract, you kind of got the carrot out in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
So you can negotiate him down a little bit, and you lock him in. And you can talk to him about, you know, that you have a right to have the field guys that you want work on it. Well, in doing that, you're going to get yourself out of a position to where when he starts working on it, all of a sudden it goes to $50 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you've locked that number in. It's not 40. Now he's going up because he's got you over a barrel. The other thing is negotiate his profit and his overhead on all change orders.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're going to start to do is control those cost overruns.
Mm-hmm.
and not let them get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Charlie, you're saying you need to negotiate these things ahead of time. You need to. Who is you? Are you talking to the pastor? The pastor needs to be negotiating with all these different individuals?
You know, that's a really – it's a really hard question because most of the time the church don't want to get that involved. They think they do, but they really don't. And that's why I've liked the construction management for churches. When I was in the contracting business, it seemed to pit everybody against one another. When I showed up on a job as a general contractor, I was the low guy. That's the reason they hired me, not because they were my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that job takes that role. It pits the architect against the builder against the architect and the owner against them all. And so that's the reason that when I started doing churches, I like the construction management role, that I want to be on the team and help the mm-hmm. pastor do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can put Pastor Hagin come to me when we got ready to build the church at Rhema, and it was the first time I had known this would work, but it was the first time we created a team. And that really works well,
mm-hmm.
where you have somebody you really trust, and the architect, the owner, and myself, we were on the same team. And we did it for the – everything was done in the interest of the church,
mm-hmm.
not in the interest of the general contractor or the architect
mm-hmm.
or the owner. It was done in the interest of the church. And so everything we negotiated – when I'm out there, I'm negotiating to save the church money. Well, if you can set that kind of team up for yourself – that's going to be your best results.
The pastor arranging a team to surround
yes.
him. Let me read a couple of things that some of the pastors said. Here's one pastor that said, if possible, have a liaison between the pastor and the contractor. This will ease some of the pressure for the pastor. Another pastor said, have an experienced project manager that can keep account of budget and expenditures. He said, in a fast and concentrated time, we had some forgotten expenses and unknown problems that put greater stress during a high-demand season. And then another pastor who underwent an extensive renovation after he went through it said, the first thing I would recommend is hiring a qualified project manager that will represent your interest during the project and not the interest of the contractors. And he talked about have the project manager verify all work completed against all invoices submitted before authorizing the bank to disperse funds. He said, we learned the hard way, resulting in a 3-year delay in our project due to frivolous legal entanglements.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the legal messes that people get in if they get a contractor that's not doing right and the pastor doesn't really have the time to oversee all that properly? Have you seen pitfalls
yes.
in those
yes.
areas?
I mean, it's there's a challenge every day on a construction site. One of them that I see probably more than any is in most states, particularly here in Oklahoma, North Carolina, Virginia, and there's, I'd say most states, you got to have your lien waiver signed. And here's the deal. You got to have them signed by not just the sub. Let me try to give an example, maybe paint a better picture. If you pay a general contractor or a subcontractor and he don't pay his suppliers or his people.
So he takes off with the money or he goes bankrupt
or something.
That's right.
Then they're going to turn around and sue the church, file liens on you, and you're going to have to pay the bills again.
Okay, so you pay the contractor for a specific job that's supposed to be
done.
That's
right.
But he does not pass the money on.
That's right.
He goes belly up for some reason.
Yes.
And then the church is still liable.
That's right. The church is liable. They're going to have to make good on that.
They can't say, well, we already paid it.
That's right. And that's the law in most states, most of the ones I've run into. Now, there's ways around that. There's you can hire a bonded contractor, okay, and you can get a performance bond. That means a performance bond and a payment bond. They add about 2% to the job. Now, there's a pitfall to that because what it'll do is it'll throw you into a different class of contractor. It won't just be 2%. It'll be 2% plus you're competing with guys who are on a different level that charge more. Okay, now it works well on really large projects and government projects. However, there's another way to do it. That what you were talking about is having somebody on your team make sure those lien waivers are signed. No checks come in here until we got lien waivers. Mm-hmm. And we want them from your suppliers and from you. Okay? And then what I always like to do is I call their suppliers. I let them give me a list of suppliers they're using, and then I call them and say, have you been paid this month?
You do that as a construction manager.
Yes, I do. And I'll spot check the subs to make sure they're paying their bills. I don't do everyone every month, but you get a gut feeling on some of them.
You're a spot check.
Yeah. Some of them you're like, you know, it's a lot of money. We're close. I don't know about this guy. So I'll call his suppliers. He gets very upset when I do it. Okay?
Because you're checking up on him.
Because I'm checking up on him. And if he's behind, I'll hold his check. And, you know, we've had cases where we found guys were signing lien waivers that they had paid everybody, but they hadn't. Mm-hmm. And I just hold the checks, and that's exactly what you should do.
Okay.
Until everybody's paid.
So you're just dealing with situations where the contractor is lying to the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you read was about having a liaison or a construction manager. I think that is an excellent idea. I think anything you can do to take the stress off the pastor and to find that right guy, I will tell you it's difficult because he has to have a lot of knowledge about construction. And you can get one that all he does is bring the information to you.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't alleviate you any stress.
He's just piling more work
He's
on
you. He's just
your
piling
desk.
More work on you. You need somebody who really knows how to handle it and handle situations. I find that very difficult, even in the construction industry, for me to find a construction superintendent or a project manager on my team that can do that for me is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, my goal as a pastor would be is to get me out from under that stress. Here's what I say. If we're taking up the pastor's time and putting him in a situation where he's becoming the builder, He's going to lose that anointing on Sunday to do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is very critical. And I really believe it will affect the funds.
Mm-hmm.
If the pastor's not doing what he's supposed to be doing and being able to feed the sheep proper and flow under the office that he's flowing under, I think it will affect his funds coming into the church. He's not going to be able to sell it as well. And that's my belief.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question or a comment that one of the people referred to, and that is, you know, how does a church determine what kind of plans they're going to have so that they don't overbuild or underbuild?
I think that's the challenge of every church. I think one thing you do is you start with a budget in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And before you go too deep in your planning, I see nothing wrong with going ahead and doing some preliminary plans of brainstorming of what the maximum you would want. And then you start to – I always see this happen. You start to draw it back in because of the financial reasons. You know, what kind of money do you have? So I'd say brainstorm, put it on paper, let your vision show on the paper, and then come back and say, we don't have the money to do this now. I tell you, sometimes – even if you have the money, say like you had the money to build a 4,000-seat or 3,000-seat auditorium, but you only had 800 people, I think it would be a detriment to your church for them to show up in this big auditorium, and you'll lose that close feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to overbuild. And I think there's some things that you can do. I've in working with Billy Joe on this last project, he was looking larger. He came back and cut it down. He wasn't ashamed to do that. Mm-hmm. He just backed up and said, you know, this is where I feel like the Lord wants us to be. And he backed up, made some changes.
You said that most pastors actually cut down from the original.
Yes, they do. And but some of them feel bad that we went and did all this planning. But I think that's casting the vision,
mm-hmm.
you know, and keeping that vision in front of you. Yeah, you're not there yet. That's okay. We're going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But some things that's been very hard for churches to do is build something that they could expand, build a sanctuary that they could expand.
Later.
And that's been difficult for them. But I would really look into doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Billy Joe has done a really good job of that. He's got a sanctuary that he can flip and add another whole side to it.
Mm-hmm.
so he could add another 5,000.
Okay.
And that's hard to find when you're planning.
Mm-hmm.
Finding that plan that's easy to expand on the sanctuary side.
Mm-hmm. When we were talking earlier today, Charlie, you said that there are different things that will drive a building program at different times. You talked about a lot of them will start out, I think you said, design-driven,
mm-hmm.
and then some are time-driven. Others right. are budget-driven.
That's right.
I can't remember if there were more, but if you could elaborate on some of that.
There's basically three ways that drive a project, and it's either time-driven, where you come in and say, you know what, we just had to move out of our church. We got to get in this building, and we got to do it as quick as we can. In doing that, you're going to spend less time planning. And you're going to need to get started right away. It's going to cost you more money because you're going to pay to get in quicker. A lot of manufacturing companies, those type of facilities do that, particularly in resort areas. We got to open on a certain date. So mm-hmm. they don't mind spending the money up front to get in on that date, because if they don't make that date, it's going to cost them. Well, churches aren't normally in that position, but sometimes are. Then you get to design-driven. Design-driven is getting in a situation where you really, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but you let the architect have his way,
mm-hmm.
or you have your way. Anything we want, we're going to put it in the design of this building. And there's no problem with that. You'll see a lot of that in government buildings. Mm-hmm. They're just done, to perfect precision, and all that costs a lot of money. Most churches are not in either one of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them want a good look, a good feel, but they can't afford the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get into budget-driven. And some of them you'll find that will be a little design-driven and budget-driven.
Mm-hmm.
But most churches that I run into are budget-driven. You start out saying, you know what, I got to have so many seats. That's what we're really after. We got to have the seats in here,
mm-hmm.
and we got to have it for a certain amount of money. And so the budget and the seating drives the job.
Mm-hmm.
And a budget-driven job is every meeting you have, we were talking earlier, every meeting you have with that architect, the engineer, and the construction manager, or the contractor, budget's first.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, you know, we need to do this to this room or add this on. Well, remember the budget.
Mm-hmm.
We said we wanted to be at this number. How are we going to get there if we make changes? We can't.
Mm-hmm.
So... And I think being budget-driven is really good for pastors and churches, that once you get in and you accept a certain plan, a course of action, this is where we're going, then set that number and make decisions based on it every time, that if we do this, we're not going to hit our budget.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, even in our own home life, there'll be things come up and you really don't want to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost is coming at the end.
Right.
And if you can look at it and say, you know what, this is our budget, this is going to be a change order, this is an add, or this is a deduct, and it's affecting the budget. And mm-hmm. if you make all your decisions based on that, you're going to come out really close to your budget.
Mm-hmm. When a church, and different pastors have different philosophies. You know, pastors are as different mm-hmm. in their desires and their expectations. And when a pastor does have a certain look and there are certain aesthetic elements, design elements that he really desires, maybe some of those aesthetic elements really reflect some of the values of the church, you know, what they want the community to see, what they want visitors coming in mm-hmm. to feel and experience. They believe very strongly that some of the aesthetic and design elements are fundamental. What they also find then is that just blows the budget through the roof.
Right.
And so at that point, maybe have to do thing in phases.
Yes. I think there's a way to achieve most of the time the budget you want and the look you want. Most churches, you do need to project the right image. And if you don't, come in with that in mind, you'll get something you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, don't do that. If you can't get what you want to some degree, don't build yet.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a while, because you are putting a face on for the public, and you want to look right. So in taking it that way, I would try to mix budget and design. There's a way to achieve. You know, you say, well, we want to do this with glass, and you're looking at maybe doing a lot of glass, and you may come back and say, well, how can we do this to get the same look? Mm-hmm. And let the contractor and the architect come back with some suggestions. And you may come up with just a good look and just do it a little different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, put a good face on. Mm-hmm.
But you ultimately have to communicate to the architect that it's your building, not his building.
Yes, and I think that should be one of the things up front, that you get a good understanding with the architect that, listen, this is our project. This is about the budget. This is about what we want. And if you can't work that way, then let's don't go down this road. Mm-hmm. You know, not that architects are difficult. It's the way they see things are maybe different than the way you see them. I say this all the time about people come in and they want a certain finish on a building, and they got guys who live in maybe a mobile home, and their standard of what they're seeing is a whole lot higher. Mm-hmm. And to this guy, this looks fine. Mm-hmm. Well, the architects and the owners are the same way. It's just your vision of the way you see it. And you need to have a good understanding and maybe look at some projects he's done and see if he's going to be able to achieve what you want. And sometimes I run into, they'll look at a project that the architect did that was great, and then they hire him to do it, but they can't afford that greatness. Mm-hmm. You know, they just can't afford that. So they hired a guy who could really do a great job, but they needed somebody who really was comfortable building churches and being budget-driven. Mm-hmm. And that's what you see.
Mm-hmm. I found another comment. I wanted to read this because this is what one of the other pastors said. And before I read this, let me comment on this, that I have visited several churches where the pastor had a real strong business background, or the pastor had a background in building and construction. And the pastor just, I mean, he wanted to be the contractor. He mm-hmm. wanted, you know, his hands-on every day. And so we're not trying to set any one rule for any given church, but here is what one pastor wrote. He said, when we built our church, we acted as the general contractor and subbed out the work to others. Although we saved money, it was a nightmare. It was a lot of hard work and stress. Never again will we do this. We will not cut corners. And then he closes with this statement, leave the building to the professionals. And do you hear that kind of sentiment?
Yes.
From
yes.
pastors?
Yeah, it's, you know, it sounds easy, and sometimes I'll even make it sound easy. I'll say, well, you get a superintendent, we do this, we do that, and you can get it done yourself. But I've got my whole life in it. Mm-hmm. So it sounds easy, but even with me putting a superintendent on a job, he's got a million questions every day. I mean, I'm either on the internet talking with him or on the cell phone. Mm-hmm. And then all you subs are asking you questions. And, you know, sometimes I think people have they say, well, we saved this amount of money. Well, you know, I don't know if I would agree with them or not. How do you know? You didn't go the other route. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at some things, you say, well, we think we saved 10%, but we didn't hire a builder. But how do you know? You know, these guys, the subs you knew may have been 10 or 15% higher mm-hmm. than the ones he knew. So to get a handle on that's really difficult. Even with me, with dealing with a price, when I'm getting sub quotes, doing as much as I've done it, I can look at the quote and say, well, that number's too high. I need to go find another number. You know, generally speaking, I got that feel. Or that number seems too high. I need to find out what's wrong. Are we using products that are better than I think, or what are we doing? And so sometimes I'll go to two or three other contractors, and sometimes that'll start bringing back to me information saying, wait a minute, the specs on this, they're over-specced. Or you may find that one guy, that number you're looking for, that is $50,000 less or $100,000. Then you have to determine, can that guy do this job for $100,000 less? Okay, here's where a real problem comes in. I tell pastors all the time this, is I'm looking for that guy who's $100,000 less. I sure am. But if he gets in the middle of the job and he fails, and you were basing all your budget on $100,000 or less, now you're going to have to make that $100,000 up to go get it. So what I suggest is sometimes I suggest not using them if I feel like they've missed something. But most time what I'll suggest is, listen, let's use the guy's number. I think he can do it. I think he has enough grit in him to make this work. But let's go in it knowing that we may have to give this guy $25,000 more to get him through this project. Okay? Let's don't let him go bankrupt. Let's let him get us through this project. Rather than let him fail, then you got to go find somebody to do it who's going to charge you more than what you started with.
Real high price.
Yeah, you're in a worse situation. So all that goes on, and as a pastor, I just can't imagine you having time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's consuming. My whole life is consumed, my thought life, my Saturdays, my Sundays. If I'm not there, I'm sleeping on it, you know, even at night. A lot of times I'll get answers at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll wake up and I'm like, okay, I know what to do here, or I'll wake up startled. I didn't think about this. I need to make sure we're taking care of that on that job. So I would definitely recommend a pastor not put himself in that position. Mm-hmm. It's just too much work.
Yeah. Here's two components, and this is another person who says, I've seen many stable men of God get totally burned out that you would never think it could happen to. And they talked about having someone else on staff to oversee the project, which I know some pastors will do that too. They'll have an associate pastor
or a
business administrator. But again, it's to be a buffer for the
yes.
pastor. But here's two observations this individual made, and they've built before. He said construction deadlines are rarely met and expenses are almost always overestimated.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see, a little bit of a negativity there. But comment on that. Construction deadlines are rarely met, and expenses are almost always underestimated. From your experience, do you agree
yes.
with that?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I it's hard to put give you a true answer to what causes that. There's so many different things that cause that. Project I'm working on right now, I'm 2 or 3 weeks waiting on the engineer to get information to us. And so what does that do? That starts to bog the project down. And he'll come in and we'll get the information, and then it'll take you a couple weeks to organize to go do that part of the job. So, yes, and the same thing with budget, what we talked about earlier. Why are those cost overruns? Well, a lot of times it's things that you get in the project and you realize, I want it a little different than that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get cost overruns. There's other times where you feel like you had a complete set of plans, and the sub you got, he gets in there and he proves to you you didn't, and he didn't bid it that way. So you're going to have to pay extra to get that. There's one little thing that comes to mind that I like to put in the contract when I'm dealing with the subs. I give them a set of plans and I let them bid it. Then I sit down and have meetings, say like with a plumber. I'll bid it 3, 4, or 5 plumbers, and then I'll meet with each one individually. Somewhere in there in my meetings, they'll start telling me about something that's different. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it may be a cost savings. Well, as I meet with the other ones, if they don't bring it up, I'll ask them about it. And then I'll start asking them for things that are unseen. What are you seeing here that's unseen? Well, some of them will tell you. Then you can go to the next one. Then I like to add it in before we do the contract. So we know, okay, yeah, we missed it. Let's put it in the contract. But the other thing that I like to add in my contract is that they review the plans and they see it as complete. There shouldn't be any extras based on their knowledge, and they're part of the design team, okay? And that don't cure all your problems. But it does give you some teeth when you go back to them and say, wait a minute now. You reviewed these plans. You told me there weren't any hidden things.
You have them sign off on
and,
it?
Yeah, I have them sign the contract, and that's in it. So, they're not design professionals, but they got a good understanding of how things go together. What you don't want to get into is a situation where you got an engineer who specified power for an air conditioner, but the air conditioner comes and it's got the wrong motor to it. They don't meet. So then you got problems, and you got to redesign, and it costs more money. That's the kind of things you're trying to keep from happening, mm-hmm. and so you don't have so many cost overruns. Can you build a building on budget? Yes, you can. But you can't go in and set your budget so tight that's unachievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if everybody can sit at the table and be honest, I think you can build the budget and have a proper amount of flexibility in it, mm-hmm. and do the same thing on time constraints. Can you build it ahead of schedule? Yes, you can. But you need to give enough time to do it. And a lot of times that don't happen. And for whatever reason, it can be as much as that we need to be in by this date. And you've set a date that you need to be in, but you don't have all your plans and you're steady waiting. Mm-hmm. Well, of course it's going to shove that back. And, yeah, you can try to achieve that, but you may not.
In some parts of the country, you've got big weather issues.
That's right.
On when you can break ground,
yes.
When you can be at certain phases of the mm-hmm. building, things like that.
Yeah, and that really plays in a lot of areas that you don't want to do your foundations in wet seasons. Mm-hmm. If you can beat that season, don't mean you can't do them in wet seasons, but if you can beat that, you're going to be better off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The one thing that I reading through there was hidden cost, and that just kept bringing out a lot of people asked
several
that question,
different.
Hidden cost. And that's a little bit of that explanation that I was just giving. You know, what you want to do in your planning stage is uncover hidden costs. Don't run from them. Uncover them and deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having the proper planning, spending that time doing those monthly meetings and evaluating costs as you go along, a lot of times what we're doing is sometime in there we'll get a preliminary set of plans from the architect before he's finished. I'll take them out to bid, and I'll tell the plumbers, electricians, okay, we know these are preliminary, but you add the proper cost to them, and let's get some preliminary pricing. And it helps you to start to build that budget and start to have a picture. And then you get, like this year, we had steel go up about 40%.
Mm-hmm. I think it won. A 40% increase in the cost of steel.
Yeah, in about a three-month period of time. And you can get caught in those situations.
Mm-hmm. What's the cause for the increase?
It's something to do with China. I'm not sure. They're buying a lot of steel.
Okay.
And it's like the market opened up to them. And it's not that we don't have the steel here. But it seems like they're buying steel all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's what's been going on. And concrete's gone up a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Charlie, what are the other things that a pastor comes to you and, you know, says, give me some tips, some advice about building? We've talked about planning. We've mm-hmm. talked about a lot of communication issues with the different parties involved. Any other major things that come to your mind that pastors really need to know?
I think one of the biggest things, too, is on finance. You know, we talked a little bit about getting started early, you know, a year or two early. There's different ways to do it. I'm seeing a lot of people raising money different ways. But I think the church, once that building project starts, they need to go on a money diet, to where that this construction project is the biggest thing we're doing. And during this time, we're going to sacrifice in other areas. Because that way, if something unforeseen does come up, you've got the money. And a lot of times you try to run on. It's like building your house. When you get in the middle of it, there's things that you didn't know, and now you got to come up with money to do this. I think that is a major issue. Sacrifice during the building project. Save some money. Save some money before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use that money. A lot of people will go and use that money on the front end and then use borrowed money on the tail end. Don't use your money on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Use the borrowed money up front. And hopefully you do it for that. And if you do, then you put your money against the note.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you more strength. You don't want to go back to the bank at the end of the job and have to refinance.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're in a position of strength then. They're going to charge you more points, origination fees, interest is going to go up all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put yourself in that position. Make sure you get enough money. And I would always tell people, if you think it's going to be $5 million, and you can borrow $5.5 million, borrow the $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. You only pay on what you borrow. Mm-hmm. So if you turn $500,000 in, at the end, your payment's based on that. Mm-hmm. So make sure you're borrowing enough money. The other thing that I see ministers do is, I said this earlier, but they're talking to a bank. They got a feeling that the bank's going to loan them all the money they need. When you start, and I really believe in this, and a couple people mentioned this in these questions, was establish a relationship with your banker. And when I say that, that means give him all the information long before you're going to build. And when you get ready to start to build, you say, listen, we're planning a $3.5 million project. Are you going to be able to loan me that kind of money? Now, see, that's different than saying...
That's getting specific.
That's being specific. And be real specific. And package yourself well. I see so many churches that when you come to their financial records, they're in disarray. Make sure you're packaging yourself well that he can look right through it real easy. And he'll say, you know what, these people are on the ball. Here's all their information. Mm-hmm. Here's their donors. Here's how much they're giving. It'll be real easy for him, and he'll have confidence in you. It boils down to the bank's not going to loan the money to the church. He's going to loan it to the pastor, mm-hmm. because his confidence is going to be in the pastor. So if he's looking to you and you're making a good front, he's going to be more willing to loan you the money. The other thing is also know that you're going to have about 20% down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just business, and they're not going to do much better than that. And in knowing that you're going to have 20% down, some of that can be your land or cash in the bank or other assets. They will consider that. The other thing is they're not going to loan you over a 25 to 30% debt ratio. So
explain what that means.
Okay, if you're let's say you want to borrow $1 million. That means they don't want to see any more than 30% of that going to the payment of your income. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got $1 million worth of income coming in. Then they're not going to want to see no more than 25 to 30% of your income going to debt. Mm-hmm. Okay? So if your debt ratio is out of line, they're not going to loan you the money. And you can pretty much pre-qualify yourself if you just know those two things. I need 20% down. My debt ratio can't be this. Mm-hmm. And you'll kind of know going in. Again, there's just your local bank. They're great to get money from. But there's other sources that can be more liberal. And I'm not even talking about bonding companies. I'm talking about just financial loan institutions. Bond companies are more stringent. They're going to charge you more money. And you need to know that going in. It's not a deal. The reason people go to bond companies is because they can't go to financial institutes and borrow money straight out. And so also know that when you...
Is that because what they're building is too big?
One of those ratios is out of line. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they have to go to a bonding. Bonding, normally speaking, the ones I've seen is the moment you borrow the money, you start paying interest on the full amount. Mm-hmm. So... that is a lot of money in itself, plus the interest rate's normally a little higher. And so know that going in, that on your finances. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all this, a lot of this ties into simply what Jesus said about counting the cost ahead of
yes.
time. And Jesus didn't advocate some kind of blind leap in the dark
that's right.
without some real sensible appraisal
yes.
of things.
Now, I would say for a pastor to take your time. You know, don't feel pressure to build a church. I'm a builder. I love to build a church, you know. But the truth is sometimes you may be better to buy an interim building before you build a church. I've seen a couple pastors where they went out and they rented a building and it gave them the growth they needed. They were able to go in this next building and grow. And then they could go build their building. Sometimes I've seen that a church will so strap themselves in building a smaller building mm-hmm. that once they're in there, they can't grow. And so their finances can't go up no more than make that payment. And actually, it hinders their growth. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend that building is a last resort. And it's needed. But if you can do something else and do it quicker and easier, say you either buy a building or you rent a building. Say you go buy an old Walmart or something that gives you a lot of room at a really cheap price. It puts you in a position to really grow.
Mm-hmm.
And you turned it around in like 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
You were in and out. You didn't put all the stress on your people. And you doubled or tripled your facility size. And now you're in a position where you can get some income, save some money, and then go out and build the church you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen two or three occasions where a friend of mine in New Orleans, he talked to me about building. We went through the whole process. We got the plans together. We were ready to go. And his wife came home one day, and she said, "Honey, I saw our building today." And he said, "No, you didn't either." And she said, "Yes, I did." She said, "We're supposed to go look at this." It was an old appliance store. It actually wasn't that old. Had 40,000 square feet. He was going to build about a 5,000 square foot building. And he called me about it. I said, "Well, you should go look at it." He went and looked at the building. They sold him the building, parking lot, everything for $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to spend $1 million on a much smaller facility. He went in there and fixed this up. He had more room than he needed. He split mm-hmm. the building in half. It looked great. And his church was able to grow. And now they've taken over the whole building.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kind of things are out there, and I know you believe God for them and keep your eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely recommend looking in all those areas before you go build something that locks you into four walls that you can't grow.
You mentioned the parking issue. Do a lot of churches, I don't know what expenses are on parking lots, but do a lot of churches find out that the parking issue is real?
Yes. Parking is very expensive. If you're in a area where you're not in town, a lot of times they'll let you do it and just park with like a rock parking lot or even on the ground. But you get in the city, they're going to make you have certain type of drainage, retention ponds, probably going to do concrete or asphalt, curb and guttering, and that stuff is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back to planning, just talking about parking lots a little bit. In your planning stage, you talk about these type of things. One thing is, if you're on a site that has different elevations, you want to make sure that the site balances what we call balances. Because if you got to haul off a bunch of dirt, it costs a lot of money to haul off dirt. Or if you got to bring in a bunch of dirt, it costs a lot of money. What you want to do is talk to the civil engineer while he in these early meetings and say, "Listen, we don't want to spend a bunch of money in site work. We want this site to balance. Can you do that?" That will be our goal. Now, you can't always make them balance perfect, but that's your goal. Because moving dirt, heavy equipment, is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get it to where you got a hole and you move some dirt and fill it in and you bring the site up to where you don't have to bring in dirt or haul off dirt, you've saved a lot of money.
Yeah. Another thing that kind of going back to the in the parking area, a pastor friend of mine in another state, they bought a piece of property. And I don't know what stage they found out about this, but at some point in the process, the city said, "Well, for you to build a church there with the number of people that you have, you're going to have to pay for a traffic light to be installed." And if I remember right, it's been a long time since I've talked with this pastor about this, but I think it involved them having to add a lane of traffic out on a public street.
Yes.
And a traffic light. And the church was responsible for it.
Yes.
And it was mega expensive.
Happens quite a bit. Not uncommon at all that the city makes you do the improvements and then they take them over. Any subdivision that's built, the contractor does the improvements,
mm-hmm.
the city takes it over. So in going to do a church, it's not much different. I built hotels where they wanted us to put a street behind the property. We didn't need it, but they wanted it, so we'd have to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
Run water lines for them, traffic lights. So, yes, you have to do that. One thing on the parking is most cities are around, they figure on commercial buildings around 4 people to the car. So the seating requirements in most cities, if you do what the city says and you reach your full capacity, you're not going to have enough parking.
Mm-hmm.
Charismatic churches, the rule of thumb is about 2.25 per car to 2.5. So if you go in and you build your parking lot the way the city requires you and you reach capacity, you're probably going to be too small.
Okay. So you can't base your parking estimate based on what the city says you need to have?
No, you can't.
Okay.
So you need to be thinking about that. What is our real needs? And sometimes we'll go do church surveys and go to the church and see how many cars are actually in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And then weigh that against the people that are there. And so we know when we're getting ready to build about what ratio they have.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're finding is about 2.5 people per car.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a question that comes up sometimes. Pastors, in order to trim costs, will sometimes see about having some of their own church members to do some of the work on the building. Mm-hmm. What are some of the pros and cons on that?
I actually like it. In the way that I'm doing churches, I like to have that that help. What you can find is, what I like to do is, after doing it for several years and working with Raymond, doing it with them, is you need to set aside specific jobs for them. One thing that you're going to run into on the church is that cleanup is a major factor in the cost of the job. You can spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on cleanup. Well, that is an excellent area where you can have church people come in that you can show them what they need to do and have them do that. Another area that I like, and something that I've tried, and we've tried different things. Some of them work, some of them don't work. But like I like painting the building, because painting seems to be an expensive ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get a painter from your church who's qualified, or hire somebody else and pay them by the hour, and then facilitate them by having some volunteers there to make sure everything's going and cleaned and they can roll paint. I don't like to necessarily just use volunteers to paint.
Mm-hmm.
I want a professional with them
mm-hmm.
to lay it out and make sure it's done right, because I've done it the other way, and the church is not really that happy with it when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But what you going to say?
Right.
You know, your people did it,
mm-hmm.
so you live with it. I think the better way is to have a professional in there making sure it's done right. And if things need to be come back and touched up, he does it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. The other thing that I'm running into more and more is I'm finding that if you go out to the people early on, particularly in larger churches, you may have some contractors in your church, subcontractors, that want to give a part back.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that.
For a tax donation, or a tax receipt?
Yeah. Well, actually, some of them do it for a tax receipt. Some of them don't. I got a guy right now who's all the storm sewer under a parking lot. He said, you buy the material, I'll put it in.
Hmm.
And that's a sizable chunk of money.
It is.
He's got some heavy equipment. He comes in and puts all that down. He said, that'll be my part.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's all those avenues, and if you leave them open, it just works really good. For me also, the fact that the people feel like they're involved in the project, the more you can keep them involved, mm-hmm. the church. I run into situations where the church wants me to give them things, a list of things that we're doing, so they can pray about them. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps involvement on different levels, on the spiritual level and for volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Works good.
Excellent. Yeah, I just thought of a church here in Tulsa that had someone killed on their construction site. I'm assuming it was one of the subcontractors or worked for one of the subs.
Yes.
And is there a special kind of insurance that churches need to take out during a construction project?
Yeah. What you want to do, actually, the project you're talking about, the guy, I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for a friend of mine. But you need liability insurance.
Beyond your normal
yes.
policy.
And you need a workman's comp policy. Now, a lot of churches don't carry workman's comp on the people they hire anyway. I think that's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a guy working for you, and say you're not building a church, but he's working for you, and he falls and gets hurt, you need workman's comp on him.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets disabled, they're going to sue the church. You know, chances are they're going to sue the church. If he's going to the airport to pick up somebody and gets hurt in an automobile accident, yeah, of course your car insurance will pick up the the accident, but not the disability. So you really need workman's comp. And if you get workman's comp, it'll cover you in case somebody falls through the cracks on a construction site.
Mm-hmm.
You happen to hire somebody to do one little thing that didn't fall under the contractor's insurance. He falls off the roof. He just went up to get something for you. And that workman's comp will pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
So you need workman's comp. You need liability.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need your builder's risk. So, yeah, you better be insured properly.
What is builder's risk?
Builder's risk is the insurance on the building while you're building it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a storm, a fire, okay. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers a lot of other things, and you'd need to talk to your insurance man, but mm-hmm. covers a lot of other things. That builder's risk is really good.
Mm-hmm. Great. Charlie, are there any final thoughts you have about things pastors should know, things to consider?
You know, a lot of things go through mind, but I think the main thing is what I said before is for the pastor to take his time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and enjoy the process. I mean, we all go through life, and you can make this hard, you can make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
But try to do your planning, take your time, enjoy the process. Don't be so stressed out that you never want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Brother Tipton telling me that he always liked staying a building project.
Mm-hmm.
And
so he'd learned to enjoy it.
He said he loved to keep a building project going. He said he kept something going with the people, keep the vision before them, and that's the way he did it. I think there's something good to be said for that,
mm-hmm.
that you keep something going all the time, that you're always moving ahead. So enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
Excellent. Well, again, I want to thank all the pastors that contributed to this with their insights and thoughts and comments. And Charlie, I want to thank you for coming and being a part of this. On the front of this CD, we're going to have Charlie's contact information. And the name of your company, Charlie, is Daniels and Daniels Construction Management. And just appreciate your expertise, what you've shared with the pastors today. And thank you so much. I believe that you're going to help some guys through this building process that some of them are going to be jumping into. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pastor.